Blog Talk Radio.
My co-host in Studio V today, I guess Studio A, is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you doing?
Don, fine, and best of luck in your pursuit to become the first African-American chair of the Republican Party in Minnesota. A lot of discussion going on, Don.
Yes,
with respect to your announcing your candidacy, I understand you are an official candidate. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I put it out there in ways that some people just don't understand. And so, yeah, I thought it was the right time. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, people are saying that in our community that the other side of the aisle is not being cooperative. And I think that I have to be the myth buster on the other side of the aisle. And
okay.
So that's kind of my goal. It's a 3-4-tier goal because, you know, that position is about raising funds, and it's unfortunate that our Republican Party of Minnesota has not contacted really any major national organizations in over 2 years. And this year, the current chairman of the Minnesota GOP, Pat Shortridge, was a campaign manager for Kurt Bills. And I'm just wondering, isn't that not a conflict of interest?
Wow.
To be the GOP chair and then a campaign manager for a losing campaign at that, you know? I mean, if you could do something, you know, take Michelle Bachmann under your wings. At least you know you'll get a win out of that.
Yeah. Now, this is the same Republican Party here in Minnesota that had some real financial troubles coming out of the, what was it, the 2010 election, which Governor, 2010. Had some real financial troubles. Didn't the chairman back in at that time, wasn't he drummed out of the party in disgrace?
Well, yeah, he actually, it started back in 2008 with Ron Carey, and then the debts just started to build up. There were lawsuits, fines, penalties, et cetera, and it just got to like over $1 million. And then earlier last year, you know, they were almost threatened with eviction out of the St. Paul headquarters.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes, mm-hmm. and then so, you know, they have it down to about $750,000, but anyway, I look at it, it's still $1 million plus, you know.
Oh, that's just pocket change for the 1%ers. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you talk about big corporate in Minnesota and et cetera. Yeah. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
Well, the best of luck there, Don. You know, of course, as a leftist, if you will, to see that misery is kind of enjoyable, you know, particularly in light of the campaign they waged against President Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, I know that you're moving in the tradition of Lincoln. In fact, I was looking at some information. I know you can't share a lot with us at this point, but this the Lincoln Brigade, if you will, the Lincoln wing of the Republican Party, I've never really heard that talked about much, though. I went back and did some research, and I see that periodically it has emerged since, you know, the days of Emancipation Proclamation and Abraham Lincoln. I know there's a lot of talk in the heartland of Republicanism down there in Illinois, so you think you're going to get some support as it pertains to being able to attempt to carry out the dream of Abraham Lincoln and his vision?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm counting on the support from the Lincoln Brigade and other and for other organizations that I've connected with. But Ms. Edwards, you said something really profound earlier about the Republicans and the campaign they launched against President Barack Obama, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about that, and this is why I need to do what I need to do here in Minnesota, the Minnesota GOP in all of 2012 and during the campaign season, their best rocks hurdled were the rocks they hurdled at Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we really have no business here in Minnesota attacking the first black president of the United States. There's too much work here to be done. We have a congressman in the 4th congressional district. We have a congresswoman in the 5th or in the 5th congressional or the 4th congressional district, and you know, Congressman Ellison in the 5th. And both of them are just, you know, they take for granted the votes, okay? And we don't have much economic development going on, as we'll talk about, you know, a little bit later here. And there's some things that have to be changed. You know, I don't think that this party here in Minnesota needs to focus on what's going on in Washington, D.C. just yet.
And use the race card, because I assume Mr. Allen, in your position, if successful as chair of the GOP, that you certainly would not encourage or participate in race baiting as it pertains to what's been the doctrine here the last, you know, 10 years or so.
Oh, not at all. It needs a total facelift. And, you know, this Minnesota GOP needs to be as liberal as Minnesota's own Fox News, which is totally flipped from the side of the New York Fox News.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
maybe they'll get a permanent black anchor to you know, replace the legacy of the legendary and celebrated Robin Robinson, if you will.
Yeah.
Talking about brigades, Don, received a number of calls from some of my international associates around the country, wanted to know what we were going to be doing on this segment. I told them I would do a brief and see if we, you know, got any kind of calls or anything. Need to keep an eye on the current conflict in North Africa, in the nation of Mali, the situation that happened in Algeria, where some Americans appear to have lost their life, along with other nationals from other countries, if you will. Keep your eye on that, though. It appears, once again, you know, we're in the business of, you know, killing people of color.
Yes.
It seems to be a legacy, and I'm really saddened that President Barack Obama is caught up in that situation, if you will, you know. But, I mean, I understand there's no conflict with Mother Russia now, and Europe seems to be stable only in the sense of that, you know, they're not fighting each other per se. You know, they're having enough problems with their economic survival. But again, you know, a war in the Negev against, you know, again, persons of color who also are Muslims. I do see that Congressman Ellison of the 5th Congressional District spoke out against the drones being used in Pakistan. He probably needs to speak out against the drones that are also now being used in northern Mali, and the United States wanted to use in the attempted rescue by Algerian special forces in eastern Algeria. But the Algerians refused, and were really kind of, you know, nasty with the United States in doing that. But I would suggest that, you know, again, our number is out there, but I would suggest that, again, African Americans need to keep an eye on, once again, conflict in that part of the world. You know, I talked to terms back in the summer that people weren't asking enough questions about what was the real intention and purpose of the U.S. African Command.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, you got a lot of natural resources. You probably have the equivalency of $17 or $18 trillion of resources right there in places like Somalia, Nigeria, particularly with its rich oil fields, Liberia, Ivory Coast, but also Mali. Boy, that's a lot of profit for the Europeans, if you will.
Yeah.
And what's so ironic in closing on this situation in Mali and the urgency that the French felt, though the French can't conduct a sustained military effort without immediate American support. The French are at their military limit just about now. But the French, you know, were the former colonial masters of that part of the world.
Yes.
And treated people of color, the black people, if you will, real bad, real poorly, as the colonial masters. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, want to keep your eye on North Africa, the situation in Mali. Some overspill, if you will. You can expect there will be some overspill to some of the other countries in close proximity. Nigeria needs to be careful, if you will. Chad needs to be careful. This thing could escalate, but we'll see. But once again, America involved in quote unquote military actions against people of color.
Yes. And I will I'm looking at that. I was just looking at something here on the monitor in the studio about the Congo and the, how the Chinese negotiated to build roads for them for their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
They're the minerals out of there. I find that to be pretty interesting.
By the way, that was one of the reasons that the Defense Department, the State Department and the Defense Department, I'll give it the proper order, have been concerned about Black Africa, if you will. Chinese are taking full advantage of relationships there, and that piece you just did with respect to the Congo reflects that the Chinese are attempting to become an influence in this case, Central Africa, if you will. The Congo, Burundi, Uganda, places like that. The United States is not very comfortable with that, but the Chinese maintain that, fair trade, if you will. I talk about fair trade, I'm talking in terms of the goods and, resources and wealth is open for everybody as long as the sovereign, notice the word we use here, Mr. Allen, the sovereign governments of those countries decide that that's who they want to go with,
Yes.
Yeah, maybe everybody doesn't want to buy Pepsi Cola. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or eat Kentucky Fried Chicken. No, there's a lot of Pepsi Cola and Kentucky Fried Chicken in Asia and China, et cetera, but it has to do with, business arrangements. But, Don, some real tensions now in our city is an outgrowth of a very disturbing incident and series now of incidents, including an African-American former school teacher being pushed and cursed by a security guard at Washburn a couple of days ago. Anything new, any updates that we need to be talking about here?
I know the school district has planned a meeting jointly with Isaiah, the faith-based organization. Actually, they don't want a real conversation, so that's why they joined with Isaiah. The 23rd, actually, at 5 p.m.
Wednesday?
Wednesday at the Washburn High School. So that will prove to be very interesting, to say the least.
Well, my understanding is, Don, that there will be security restrictions. Maybe those who are listening in right now here in the Twin Cities, and particularly in South Minneapolis, the schools, of course, will be closed on Monday because, we'll be celebrating, Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy. But people may want to text the district. Stan Allen, the communications director, the man who told the Minneapolis Star Tribune that there was no meeting. There was going to be no meeting the other day. People did show up when the district realized that there were too many Black folk coming that they couldn't control. They canceled the meeting. But they should call Stan Allen and ask Stan Allen to verify as communications director what the protocol will be, what kind of security arrangements. You have no control on how many police will be there. And, of course, given how the police in this town are beating and whipping young African-Americans, I'd be kind of concerned. And then after the incident involving a retired Minneapolis teacher being pushed and cursed by, and this was so sad, a Black security guard, woman who wouldn't have a job if it, weren't for people out there fighting for them, if you will. So anyways, that may be a question they may want to ask, but I understand there will be some very strict security arrangements.
Yes, I look forward to that. I plan on making that one, Mr. Edwards. I know I had posted that, people are IBNN and reporters from On Point will be at the event that was taking place last week. But I was not there, but I know that you were there, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, I was.
And, you witnessed that pushing and
I didn't witness the pushing. I don't want to say I witnessed it. I wasn't, but it happened. I arrived and heard the conversation, and then had a chance to talk directly to the retired Black educator. She and seven other people confirmed. In fact, a couple people have it on their smartphones. The actual push, as well as the cursing of this African-American former educator, if you will. So it was rather interesting. It was rather a tense situation, particularly in light of the fact that there were preliminary indications that our good friends, the Billy Bobs and the National States Rights Party and neo-Nazis had gotten a hold of it and were going to come to the aid and defense of their beleaguered brethren. And, boy, I heard some of the conversations out there the other day from a lot of the white students and also a couple, you know, colored ones. I mean, they were basically saying nothing wrong with putting a rope around a black doll and pretending that it was a black baby. I mean, there was nothing wrong with that, which means, you know, I don't know what kind of American history they're doing at in the Minneapolis public schools, but this is not the first time that I've you know, kind of discerned that there's just an absolute ignorance, really. Mm-hmm. I hate to use that word, but there's an absolute ignorance with respect to history, particularly as it pertains to Americans of color and particularly to African Americans, you know. Mm-hmm. And I heard little white students say, repeat it again, I mean, that there was nothing wrong with doing it and that it was nothing but a strain. Well, the strain was put in place to meet the proportionality, if you will, of the dowel. You know what I mean? A dowel, a piece of string, if you will, hanging. And I got to tell you, when you look at the picture, there were a number mm-hmm. of African Americans there who had must have been at least a 4x4 picture. And I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, if I had not been aware of that it was a dowel, I got to tell you, on first glance, second glance, it looks like, it very much looked like a live being, if you will. But I'm just amazed, and you said it absolutely correct. There will be no intention to have a meaningful discussion.
Not with Isaiah. And this is part of Minneapolis public schools trying to backplay everything. They're pretty good at that. The communications department, you know, someone probably called them from Isaiah and said, "Hey, maybe we can have," and they jump right on it because they have no ideas. I mean, you have Stan Allen in there, you have Rachel Hicks, you have a couple other folks in there, and I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. It's virtually worthless department for the Minneapolis public schools.
This comes at a bad time for them because they have suppressed much of what's happening up there at Green Central. In fact, they had a cuddling meeting this afternoon, well, from 11 to 2 at the Nicollet Inn, in an attempt to put a cap on the controversy surrounding Green Central and the discrimination, segregation, racism, outrageous conducts that are taking place there coming from the administration and a principal who, you know, says that the only thing that's important in life is what happened in Mexico, you know, which is great, you know, so you should be in Mexico City teaching in the Mexico City, you know, educational system if they got one, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's a crazy mess what's going on in there. And another thing you said, Mr. Edwards, that's really important is, what are the students being taught as far as African-American history and American history in the Minneapolis public schools? Because if you remember like 4 or 5 years back, a noose incident happened in the newsroom downtown at Minneapolis Community and Technical College.
Yeah.
In the school newspaper. They did the same thing there. And it seems to be an ongoing trend, but it's even more electrified, for lack of a better word, during the months of January, Martin Luther King birthday celebration and Black History Month, where these kind of things, you know, might go on through March through December, and they don't make the kind of impact or the news that they do in January and February.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me just say this, though. This did not happen in January or February. It happened mid-November, according to the documentation that has been retrieved on this end. There was an incident at South High School in which at least 4 Caucasians put up a link and video and et cetera, and man, they used all kinds of graphic descriptions of African Americans. I thought the N-word was a part of, you know, the description of the Minneapolis public school system. What happened was the system apparently brought in a cyber detective, one of them people that knows how to get it, and they busted the little students. Now, they were supposed to be expelled and transferred out. They were sent home for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 days. Oh, by the way, the students at Washburn, it's 5 days for those that were allowed to stay, and for the ringleader, he's been transferred out. But anyways, back to South, the decision was made that these students could come back, and so, but, you know, they're being closely watched. But if it had not been for a cyber detective, someone I understand affiliated with possibly one of the larger computer companies in the United States, came in and found the signatures, if you will. You know what I'm saying? I know you guys play with those computers, Don. Found the signatures, found the hotspot, and busted them. Absolutely busted them. I mean, it was terrible, the kind of things they were saying about black people and their own fellow black students and et cetera. And yet, the district did everything they could to suppress that.
Yeah, that's...
So there's a lot of that going on. Yeah. Don, give that number out. We need to get
sure,
that
I'll do that.
In case anybody wants to call in.
And we have a caller.
Oh, okay.
You're live on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Mike here.
Hey, Mike. How are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. So what's the next test on the racism?
What are we talking about here, Mike? You mean at Washburn?
Yes, sir.
Well, I was told by a reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, it wasn't any of our business, really, that we really don't have any authority really to open our mouths about this. And I thought that was kind of an interesting statement from a journalist for the largest newspaper here in the state of Minnesota. But I think that may be right. Now, I'm aware that the Star Tribune chose not to report the fact that on the morning, the other morning, that a whole delegation of, including the superintendent, associate superintendents, and et cetera, went in for a meeting of a couple hours there at Washburn, sir. And at that time, the decision was not to cancel the meeting of the site committee. But when it was determined that there were black folk that really were going to show up and they weren't the kind that could be controlled, a guy by the name of James Burroughs, who actually is in the diversity program or something like that, became the head, Homeland Security person and came up and they had police standing by and et cetera. And they really told, people they couldn't come in. So what that basically says to me, sir, Mike, is it? Mike, yeah. What it primarily says to me is that nothing of value will happen and certainly nothing will happen that will make an attempt to correct this not happening again, if you will. And it will happen again. As we said, there was a very serious incident at South High School here in Minneapolis on the south side.
Yes.
If it had not been for a very, I understand it, a very proficient cyber detective, as they refer to in the industry, I think it was four perpetrators would have gotten away. And the things they said about black people were just absolutely ugly. And I understand that there's more of that going on that we in the general populace know. So to your question, I'm not sure. I think what will happen is that after the meeting Wednesday, Mike, that we'll be told that there has been a healing process has been started. I'm like my colleague, Mr. Allen. That's why you bring in a quasi-religious group like Isaiah, make it appear that we're, kind of going to do penance, like they do in the Catholic Church. And then basically the community that is agitated by what has happened, and rightly so, will basically be told that there's no role for them as it pertains to what's going on. People like K.G. Wilson, as an example, folks like that who are out there, we'll basically be told that it's being handled. I think the word will be used, it's being handled internally. Mike, that's my take here as someone who was on the ground there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for your call.
Thank you, Mike.
And we have another call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's go get him, Don. Let's get him.
Okay. You are live on the air. Go ahead. Who man is calling?
Is it me?
Yeah, you're live on the air.
Oh, okay. How you brother doing?
Real good, brother. Speak up. You got to speak up a little bit.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, I hear you now. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, yeah. I want to talk about this Washburn situation as a parent, first of all. And
you're
somebody
a parent?
Who has a, yes, of course.
Okay.
As a parent.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And also give some perspective on the issue, because I know you had mentioned the healing process.
Uh-huh.
As a parent who was actually coming from making sure my son's supplements to his education are coordinated correctly for the after-school support he needs over the last 40 days, spending significant time in the school as a parent, I would just like to add some contribution to the discussion and maybe some clarity on the issue.
Go right ahead, sir. Go right ahead.
So first of all, let me just say this. As a parent, I've been very impressed with at least the teaching staff that I have interacted with at Washburn. I will say that. But
does that include the principal? Does that include the principal?
I'm getting ready to get to that. But there are serious issues with the administration.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Serious issues with the administration around transparency, around a host of other things, and really about honest communication that they have with parents. Mm-hmm. Now, my comments are based around a parent perspective that has interacted significantly with Washburn and actually has improved the quality of education that's delivered to my son in the last month. Now,
and let me just say this, sir. I don't want to sound like a racist, but I have long experience. You are obviously an African American.
Yes, of course. I mean,
okay, there you go. Gotcha.
All right. Yeah, okay.
I know. I know who you are, and you know, if you decide to tell, that's fine. But I want, this is for our listening audience. I wanted to be sure that listening audience knew this was an African American parent who cares, because far too often we're always told that we African Americans don't care. So have been fully engaged.
Not.
So go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, absolutely not. And you know, the ironic thing about this whole situation is that the parents, I'm hearing a lot of feedback. Okay. The parents were the parents, students, and the surrounding Washburn community was not informed anything about this incident until Wednesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This happened Friday around the times between 1 and 2:30 in the afternoon on Friday.
Right.
Now, as a parent, my initial response is, how could that happen? Because this is a serious threat to the secure environment of our students and the school climate, that oftentimes, if you would take a little black child, and maybe in a kindergarten through eighth grade, or into high school, if, let's say, he has a firecracker in his pocket, and he's in the bathroom, and the firecracker goes off, boom. Better believe that child is going to be disciplined accordingly and possibly expelled from the school as a threat to the school environment and the safety of the students and the teaching population of the school.
I absolutely concur. Go right ahead, sir. Mm-hmm.
Now, the cultural issue here is, and this is a reflection of where we need to be as a people, too, because I honestly think, as a parent also, that our children are desensitized with such a public hanging, and a celebration around a public hanging really correlates to the history of violence, hatred, and really terroristic activity around our history, our collective history in America.
Absolutely.
And so this is also a curriculum issue where I don't know what's happening in terms of how history is interpreted, but that's American history. And public lynching and the history that goes with that needs to be definitely, if you can have a movie like Django and Lincoln come out within the same month, I hope within our classroom instructions, we're teaching our children around the absolute dangerous atmosphere that creates, even trying to mimic something like that.
Yeah, let me just say this, sir. I had the opportunity to stand after the group was told to depart the school to listen to some of students giving interviews to, in this particular case, Channel 5. Channel 4's car was parked on the other side of the school with Esme Murphy. I, you know, was just so disappointed in hearing them justify the action that had taken place, and that, in fact, there was nothing sinister or mean-spirited and et cetera about it. And you said something very earlier that I think people really need to be concerned about, because it's clear that you, not only as a parent, but you had your feet on the ground, that actually the hanging of the doll, quote unquote, which was to depict the hanging of a child, was a celebratory situation. These students were celebrating and applauding and cheering. And we as black Americans, right here in this state, in a place called Duluth, are aware and cognizant. For those that don't know, go read your history books. where a mob of 20,000 white folks on a Sunday in Duluth, Minnesota, were applauding, screaming, and ultimately tore these black men's bodies apart as they hung from telephone posts outside of the public safety building in Duluth, Minnesota. So we have more than felt this kind of pain. And when I heard, as you did, sir, that these white students were applauding and were in a festive mood and et cetera, there's just too much of that that's going on in this world of ours, and it kind of makes you raise the question of what the heck are we teaching our students? Well, but go ahead, sir. What other observations do you have?
Yes, and then let me make a few more observations, and I'm going to be proactive and tell you what's going on currently.
Okay.
So it's ironic that myself as a parent, when I heard about this incident through different conversations that the children were having that were being brought home to me as a parent, there were classroom debates around this, but no facilitated conversation or acknowledgement from the school that this incident even occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You have children chattering in classrooms, debating the merit the absolute threatening environment that was created around this. You have different children talking about this in classrooms. And when I heard about this and verified this happened, I made a phone call to the district communications department, to specifically Stan Allen and also James Burrow from Equity and Diversity. And I asked them, what is going on at Washburn? Now, around the same time, ironically enough, there was a letter that was sent via email to parents that was really not really, I feel, reflective of the symbolism and the absolute threat to security that this presented, and it was downplayed significantly. And I feel that to acknowledge this event 4 or 5 days later to parents and Washburn students and community members through an email and not send home a hard copy letter that's usually done through normal discipline policy, when children are corrected in a high level, is really almost like it almost felt to me that the school was trying to sweep this underneath the rug and not deal with it appropriately.
Right.
Now,
let me say this, sir. I mean, they need to cut you off, but we need to keep it moving. But so our listening audience, which is both local and domestic and international, understands that you are representing significant clarity and integrity with this. There is a document which was the electronic transmission by the principal under the signature of the principal. As this caller has pointed out, this event took place on a Friday and was not officially reported out until approximately 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday.
Exactly.
3:30 on Wednesday, electronically, which meant a lot of African American parents had no knowledge whatsoever.
Did not know about it.
Yes, yes. So go right ahead, sir. Continue.
A lot of our parents found out about this, and students, parents and students, white, black, or otherwise, found out about this incident on the news.
Mm. Oh,
I mean, what kind
of
responsible communication is that? Now, furthermore, moving forward, as you mentioned, a lot of people are going around talking about healing, and I'm sure that the Minneapolis Public Schools is going to try to own ownership to how this is going to be dealt with.
Okay.
But as a parent, as a concerned member of the community and actually a resident of South Minneapolis, there is a group of parents, community members, not only in South Minneapolis, but reflective of the whole Twin Cities area, that is organizing right now, and there will be a press conference that is held with different expectations and demands moving forward at Washburn and also in the Minneapolis Public Schools that will be communicated at an official press conference at the Minneapolis or Minnesota Spokesman Recorder on Tuesday, time to be determined, that was confirmed today via a phone call earlier. So,
reason I appreciate that, sir, is that I had a conversation with a reporter for the Star Tribune, who was one of the two reporters that wrote the story in the paper the other morning. One of the things he did was chastise. We did have a very heated and violent argument. Luckily for him, it was over the phone. He made the statement that how could this be of concern, and where are the voices of the black community that he hasn't heard anything. Now, he had been on the phone with Stan Allen. I got to tell it, sir. And Stan Allen had told him there was no meeting, that there really wasn't an incident, and that notification had gone out on Friday. That's what Stan Allen, director of communications for the Minneapolis Public Schools, told this reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Just a couple last things. I'm going to let y'all return back to the
Okay, go right ahead.
Now, the irony around this whole thing, right, is the Minneapolis Public Schools radio station, within the last four meetings, had a very specific radio program celebrating the music of the Confederate Army. Now, this is known. Now, there was no letter sent home to the parents, community members of Minneapolis Public Schools that services 70% children of color, and a lot of those are definitely unrepresented in terms of communication. Mm-hmm. And to have irresponsible radio programming that's signed, co-sponsored, and stamped by Minneapolis Public Schools leadership to allow some irresponsible four-hour celebration of the music of the Confederate Army, there's a direct correlation there in terms of the achievement gap and all these other things that exist. But the last thing I'll say is an observation about the newspaper article with the gentleman who seems to be the biggest figure on the cover page of the Metro section, like he was the issue and not actually the incident that occurred.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
So,
that was some of the statements that were made.
And if you look at that article, it's interesting because the gentleman is the big, large figure in the middle of the page. The top article is an article about guns. The article below is about a police ambush. And the article to the left is about three insane somebody and a rampage of violence going on. So
that's right. That's right.
I don't understand how the figure of this gentleman became the subject and not the actual incident.
Well,
that's
let me just say this.
That's to be explored further.
Yeah, let me say this, sir. You may be a little too young to remember this, but back in the day, that was called yellow journalism.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
appreciate
I know
it,
what
sir.
It is because I'm familiar with media, so I know what it is. But
okay, gotcha.
It's a dangerous observation.
Yes, it is. Appreciate you calling
in, Barry. I'm going to let y'all,
All right,
we'll have a press conference on Tuesday. Peace.
Okay, all right. Mr. Allen, your assessment, this is apparent from, according to him, I know people will say that it was somebody just called in and manufactured, but I recognize the voice,
yes,
so I know who it is,
right.
But go ahead.
Yeah.
What's your take, sir?
This is just what I explained to you earlier, Mr. Edwards. The Minneapolis Public Schools and their internal, external communication, internal being with staff, faculty, administration, external being with parents and children, is broken all the way around. And this problem they created themselves, bringing on Stan Allen and bringing a girl from Rochester, Minnesota, Rachel Hood Hicks, as the assistant director of communications, who at that point when I met with them had not seen a proposal before. And so from a Minneapolis for outreach. And it was very interesting to sit in there and figure out that, okay, this brother is not an alpha male. He's in this office. He is he's basically suffering with ideas. And that's why, you know, I'm listening to the gentleman that was talking, and this is not a new item for the Minneapolis Public Schools.
No.
This communication piece. This is the radio station he talked about. I remember that. I even ran a story about the Confederate music they were playing and just rubber stamped by the school. And this has been an ongoing issue. But in this case, who do you get to listen to you? Where are the voices, the urban league?
Mr. Allen, let me ask you this question, and this question is for our listening audience locally, domestically, and internationally. Do you know the uproar that would have taken place in this city, and we have a large Jewish population here, if the Minneapolis Public Schools have honored, respected, and touted 3 hours of the battle hymns of the Nazi army, the German army, in the period from 1929 to 1945? Do you know what would have happened? In fact, the superintendent probably would have lost her job.
Yeah, well, see, but that's what a difference of race makes, Mr. Edwards.
Absolutely, sir.
You know, and if the radio station would have been under new management, everything would have been changed. And, yeah, the superintendent, who has a target on her back anyway this year, would have been long gone out of there.
Let me also say this, Mr. Allen, with respect to that race was so much an issue and disrespect. Do you imagine what the uproar in this city would have been if a figurine depicting a Jewish rabbi had been hung outside of Washburn High School?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Oh, man, yeah. We'd have had Jewish lawyers in town talking in terms of putting the Minneapolis school district, special district number one, in state receivership.
Oh, yeah. The mayor would have did. The governor would have did a press conference.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Any calls there? Let's give that number again, Mr. Allen, just in case. And Mr. Allen, is the spelling of his name, my associate here, is different than the director in communication of communications. That's Stanley Allen. It's a different spelling, and they are not related.
No, not at all. Thank goodness. He's a brother from another mother. The call-in number is 347-426-3904. Our lines are open. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, I need to alert our listeners on what's going on with the MLK celebration.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, if you don't mind, if we just
go right
there for a second.
Right, and then we'll move into the Viking Stadium, because that's a joke.
Yeah, okay. And, okay, there are two conflicting reports or events that I should say that are happening on Monday. The one that you want to be a part of, and the real one, the real MLK celebration event, is the second annual MLK Day March and Rally for Jobs, Justice, and Housing in downtown Minneapolis. Starts out at 12 noon on 16th and Hennepin, right in front of MCDC. They go by U.S. Bank. And they
John, you're starting to break up just a tad. You're starting to break up on this end. Maybe we need an adjustment with the dials there. Okay.
Let me do this.
Got it. It's clear now. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And caller, hold on. I'll only be a second here. We do have a caller on hold.
All right.
The event that you want to go to, it's the governor's having an event, and that's for the highbrows, and then there's the real event for the people concerned about jobs, housing, and economic development. And like I said, that's Monday at 12 o'clock.
Is Occupy Minnesota is putting this on?
It's Occupy the Hood.
Occupy Minnesota. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and Neighborhoods Organization Organizing for Change, NOC, and a few other people. And
okay,
so
gotcha.
I'd like to encourage people to do that.
All right, let's do it. Let's get that caller. We don't want to. Okay.
Hey, caller, you're live on the air?
Well, I was just holding on to the queue.
Okay. You just want to leave? Okay, I'll put you back in the queue. How's that?
Okay. Just in the queue there.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Now, who is the speaker, by the way? This will get us into the next move, if I'm not mistaken. The speaker will be the powerful commissioner of the State Human Rights Department, right?
That's the other one in St. Paul. That's the one that I'm not trying to send people to, okay?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So the speaker. Now, this comes at a time when the equity plan, now being identified as a draft, which is going to be interesting because the contract will be awarded on February 1st to the construction management firm, and this is for a $1 billion construction job, okay? So you're talking about big money, big protocol, if you will. But the equity plan is out, and I call it the let's make a good faith effort document.
Yeah, exactly.
Good faith is identified at least 50 times in the article or in the it's a 39-page document as it pertains to content, and then there's about 7 pages of scales and models and et cetera, and et cetera. But anyways, there will be a public hearing, for those of you out there that are interested, there will be a public hearing on the 24th of January the representatives from the Met Council and Velma Corvell, the city's civil rights director, who relinquished all responsibility to her friend Wanda Kilpatrick, there will be a hearing, but it's not been published, and I don't know, Mr. Allen and I, during our production meeting, were attempting to find on the state website and on the the sports facility website where the hearing is supposed to be, because the chair, Michelle Kelm Hagelin, ordered that happen, and it appeared that Wanda Kirkpatrick was really not ready to do that. But for those that are interested, because I'm hearing some of my leaders saying that the African American community will pick up anywhere from $25 to $40 million.
Not gonna happen.
The only people gonna pick up that kind of money are our good friends in the Native American community.
Yes, who they have a sweet deal. They did the right thing. They have something to offer. I mean, Mr. Who else can invite, you know, some of the people from the Sports Authority up to their casinos and talk to them and have a plan? And you know, if you scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Absolutely. And we reported that in our columns during the summer. I mean, you know, meetings in northern Minnesota at the top casinos up there. I mean, the Native Americans knew how to conduct business, and they have positioned one of their firms, their major construction firm located there in Lakeville, Minnesota, will be involved as a super subcontractor to the construction management firm. And we're talking $35-40 million of the action, if you will. African Americans, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, in my column for next week in the Minnesota Sports Recorder, my prediction based upon analysis is that the African-American community, be they in targeted businesses, as it referred to, or whatever else they're targeting, will receive about 1 to 1.5% of the overall financial package.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before the stadium opens. Now, of course, after the stadium opens, I guess there will be jobs for our people as concessioners making $5 an hour with no benefits and et cetera. But my prediction is 1 to 1.5. Now, let me just say this. One of the things that's very interesting about this equity plan, and I see you have a copy over there in your studio.
Oh, yes.
Is that it has two additional layers that a citizen will have to go through to get information. One is a construction manager's oversight committee. And the second one then is a diversity, quote unquote, committee, as it is referred to. And so if, you know, John James, if you will, or Joe Blow comes in from off the street and is trying to find out how come they didn't get a contract, they will have to go through those layers before they can even raise the question to the facilities authority. And also, the equity document you've got there, Don, is absent any real enforcement, though at page 2, I believe, they mentioned the Urban League is supposed to have a job fair, whatever that's supposed to mean.
Oh, you know, Mr. Edwards, can I even just go through that section
1? Sure,
one,
Don.
What
we got here, about 12 minutes? Go ahead.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. In the document, for our listeners here locally, the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, the Minnesota Multicultural Multipurpose Stadium Construction Service Agreement Equity Plan, dated January 18th, and I am reading Section 1, Purpose and Outline Overall, Section 1, 1.5, Job Fair, pursuant to Minnesota Statute 473J.12, the authority should hold a job fair and recruit and advertise at Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathany, American Indian OIC, Youth Build Organizations, and other such organizations. Period. To facilitate the construction manager achievement, the authority's workforce goals, the authority may organize and host other similar fairs and events. Now, here's where we had a problem, Mr. Edwards, just that 1.5 section. Mm-hmm. The Urban League is more quiet than a mouse that hasn't been fed in 3 years, living in a hole by the sewers where they're broken in the basement of the Urban League.
Oh, they're also broken upstairs on the main floor. The floor
yeah.
for the last 3 days has been saturated with wetness, and they were able to clean up the human waste. Oops, that happened when, you know, the pipeline backed up and burst and all that kind of stuff. But go ahead.
Yeah, and so, I mean, with that said, I mean, why would, number one, Why hasn't Scott Gray announced this? Where's the plan? Because, you know, the Native Americans, I love my Native American brothers and Minnesota's First People, because they actually presented something that it seems like it's going to work for them. We don't have anything to offer. You know,
yes, we do. I got to take exception with you, my
friend. All right, go ahead.
My leaders indicated to Ted Mondale that, you know, anything that can be put in their pockets personally, you know, and privately would suffice, and that they would then handle the rest of suppressing anything for the masses. And I repeat that again. And in some respects, that is very much reflective in the document you have right there before you that was issued yesterday by the Sports Facilities Authority. It is quite clear that it's going to be extremely difficult for the masses of African Americans to get any piece of the action out of this project. And again, we'll repeat the figures. The actual construction cost, the dollars that the construction management firm will actually have sway over, $753 million.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. And, Mr. Edwards, we have a call.
Oh, let's get the call. Let's get the call.
Okay, calling you live on the air.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
On the air. I am calling. My name is Lisa, and I was listening to the show, and I'm listening to the school incident and, you know, you guys talking about the stadium and who's being hired and things like that. And, you know, I was thinking about the stadium, and doesn't it really all depend on who gets the contract and what their hiring policies are and if they are compliant with, you know, the affirmative action or something like that, you know, with the city and Vormel or Melver or something like that. So I wanted to just say that, but I wanted to just make a point of just organizing, and this has a lot to do with the school and with the stadium. And that's like a key word. I wanted to just use that word. I wanted to use the word public, Minneapolis Public School. I wanted to use the word 5Ws. And in connection with the spirit of what's going on with Martin Luther King and the march taking place at MTTC, and I wanted to just mention, if we can go back into a little bit of our history, since these are some very important months that we're coming upon, and talk about Genesis 6 and the history of when a noose was hung at MTTC and how a group of students got together to organize at that school. And this involved a lot of the students, so I was wondering what are the.
And by the way, let me just say this: Jenna, that you're talking about, is Jenna Louisiana. So our international audience knows what you're talking about. That was the lynching or the noose tree incident in Jenna, Louisiana. Go right ahead.
Right, that was at a high school, but then a noose was also hung at MTTC, and it was hung in the newsroom, and the school failed to, you know. To inform the students. So we did have meetings about that. The school provided a table for us to come and sit to talk. So when it comes to Washburn, what is the administration doing as far as welcoming the community who have an interest in what's going on at the school, because this is a public school? So what is the administration doing to sit us down at the table so that we could talk about this?
Well, let us answer that very quickly in the time we have left on the program. In fact, we had a parent, obviously a connected parent, and certainly had his facts together. There will be a meeting on the 23rd. Yeah, there'll be a meeting allegedly on the 23rd in concert with Isaiah. I didn't see any Isaiah representatives at the school the other day when African Americans were denied access into what was supposed to be a meeting. There will be a meeting, and the district will control that meeting. I'm of the opinion that there will be security requirements that will make it extremely difficult for non-Washburn parents, particularly if they're black, to get into the meeting. But the administration is totally in control of the situation, and they're doing it through their PR. They're doing it through consultation with white parents. One of the things, by the way, I'm glad you asked the question, young lady. One of the things that we failed to talk about, Mr. Allen, was that the pushback from the white parents about the letters of suspension, was very interesting, because they were outraged that it was suggested that the letters of suspension and the letter indicating transfer implied that this was racial animus and ordered or suggested that that be omitted from the letters. And until someone can get their hands on the letter that went to the three or four white students that were involved in this despicable act, we will never know if, in fact, the word racial animus and et cetera was, in fact, withdrawn, and it was merely a declaration that there had been a violation of district policy.
And
so are you following that young lady?
Yeah, she's actually still on the line on hold, but we do have another call we want
to
sneak in here.
Oh, just try to get them down. We're running out of time.
Yes,
going to go an extra 15.
Okay. You're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, thanks for taking my call. Just listening, one of the things the one gentleman sounds very like he's very informed about the issues going on there. Now, how organized is the business community in Minnesota? I'm calling from Michigan.
Your
Black Chamber of Commerce, where are they at?
Totally unorganized. Keep on.
Okay. Your Black banks in this, like a Sudanese or
something? Nope. We don't have
nothing.
A Black bank here.
No,
we don't.
We
don't have
no
a Sudanese
bank.
Or Somali bank either. Nope.
Okay. It's a Black Contractors Association. How many Black contractors?
Almost inactive.
Inactive, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Just had a leadership upheaval. Fired their executive director and the chairman of the board. Go ahead.
Okay. You have a local affirmative action policy as it relates to Black-owned businesses.
Oh, yeah, certainly. In both of our major metropolitan cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, the two major counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, and the state of Minnesota, has it. But let me just say this. In fact, to point, they have them, and yet we are the most egregious state in the United States as it pertains to disparity between white and Black workers.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things that I think we have to be honest with ourselves then, the disorganization of the Black community in Minnesota has absolutely nothing to do with the Jewish community or the white community. We got to take ownership of that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, sir. Yeah, we fully concur. And we say that, but let me just say this to you, that makes us extremely unpopular with the Black power structure.
Well, you know, I used to be a city commissioner in Benton Harbor. I had this one brother. He'd come up there every week. We need some damn jobs, and you know, the same old
right,
number.
Right, right.
And
I
said, I asked him after one meeting. I said, now I see you up here every week. I said, now who are you speaking for?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't see nobody behind you.
Mm-hmm.
My people. I said, well, they must not be too hungry, because they ain't up here at the podium with you. I said, now, do you need some work? He said,
yeah.
I said, well, get up here and say that then.
Yeah. Now, organization and organizational competency is extremely important. There was a time, sir, when this was a well-organized city. Actually, we call ourselves the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul. This was a well-organized enclave back in the 1950s and 60s. Unfortunately, that began to be undercut, undermined, and et cetera. But in the 1950s, particularly in the 60s, in the period of the 1960s, this was a well-organized city that would put 2,000, 3,000 to 4,000 African-Americans and their supporters on the streets for marches and et cetera and et cetera. You know, with the exception maybe, and it's going to be 15 below zero here Monday, I doubt if they'll have 300 folks marching in the Martin Luther King festivities. But the questions you asked are extremely valid, if you will, but it speaks volumes to the fact that we are a community here in the state of Minnesota that has basically been beaten to our knees.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Appreciate
it, sir.
We appreciate the call. We'll be back next week,
sir.
Too.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Mr. Evers, we're right under 2 minutes here.
Yes, sir.
And we'd like to thank – any last words before we thank everybody for listening?
No, just I think that what this gentleman from Benton Harbor – and by the way, let me just say this. Benton Harbor is one tough city, small city, but they got some tough Black folks and some tough Black leadership there. And they got a minister there who's got a blog radio program like ours who's been putting his foot in the NAACP's behind. Selling out Black people in a conflict with Whirlpool. Ooh, look out.
Okay.
Just wanted to pass that information on.
All right.
Alan.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. You're listening to On Point.